This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm at the Maslow Hotel in Sandton today to talk to Neil Hamilton, VP for Business Development at international Internet of Things specialist ThingStream. Neil, welcome to the podcast. The IoT space in South Africa is already getting pretty competitive. What is it you guys are bringing to the table?
We're pretty much bringing to the table easy IoT. We're enabling companies who have developed the use case for why they want to adopt IoT, either for cost efficiencies or new revenues, the ability to talk to our engineering firm partners that we're developing here to quickly and easily build prototypes of the things they're trying to track, or you know, the actual use cases they're building, and get that into production really quickly by removing lots of the barriers. And some of those barriers pretty much are very much around ubiquity, whereas businesses realizing that if their products move, or they need to be tracked across borders, then they just want the connectivity guarantee to be there. And that's part of what we bring, simplicity and ubiquity.
Well, tell me a bit about ThingStream. I believe it's part of a bigger Swiss group. You're based in Bournemouth in the UK. Tell me a bit about the origins of the company, how it got started, who's behind it, what the bigger group does.
Sure, yeah. So Myriad Group, as I say, it was a publicly listed company until the end of April. Now we recently delisted. And the company has historically been involved in a number of different technologies. One of them specifically, though, is fascinating, and it's they develop and provide USSD technology to mobile carriers, of which here in the market, USSD is broadly, very widely used for consumer services. And it's also an engineering messaging protocol as well. And because we understood that, and we have a deep understanding of how this works, we could see how it could be applied to IoT in terms of, a USSD connection is very secure. It can provide message payloads of around 160 bytes per message. Our technology can enable concatenation of this. But we find most IoT applications need less than 160 bytes. And we think, well, hang on, this is perfectly suitable for IoT. So that's really the seed that got us underway with this venture. We started looking at how you can apply the use of USSD for IoT applications and globally. That was where we started exploring this.
So how long has the company been around?
Myriad Group has been around for many years. I joined the company 4 years ago, but it was an amalgamation of other companies over the last 15 plus years. But ThingStream, the kind of branded division within Myriad Group, has been around since mid-year last year.
All right,
so we're a relatively new venture within the actual organization, but leveraging skills and expertise and technologies that it's had for many years.
All right. So IoT, one of the advantages of IoT is that the batteries in these devices last for many years. In the GSM context, you're not used to the idea of batteries lasting more than a few days, if that. Now, you're using the GSM network. How do you use the GSM? Perhaps just explain the technology a bit. How are you using the GSM network to both provide these sort of services and have the long battery life?
Sure. Within the, as I say, in the core GSM network, there is this messaging protocol called USSD. It's not above that layer. You'll have SMS, then you'll have 2G, GPRS, 3G, UMTS, and they're IP-based technologies that need more energy to communicate because of the nature of how they communicate. And what we're doing is with USSD, it's combined with another protocol, the ThingStream proposition, which is called MQTT, which again is it's been developed over a number of years, spearheaded by IBM, and I believe Eurotech maybe brought this to market. And it's a combination of these two protocols that enable us to use basic GSM modems inside things where the batteries will last a lot longer, because the MQTT protocol enables a device to wake up, publish its payload, turn off.
I see.
There's no handshaking with the network. There's no setup. All of that stuff is removed from the whole concept of this. So you're just technically using far less battery because you don't need to spend airtime connecting and doing all the IP-based things typically that a GPRS-based 2G solution typically would need.
Okay. That's really interesting because there's so many different IoT technologies that are being deployed in this marketplace. So I assume this technology will work wherever there is a GSM network.
Completely, yeah. Mm-hmm. So effectively, we've created this type of MVNO where an engineering firm, for example, here in South Africa, can take our SIMs. They can put their SIMs in their things. They add a small piece of code, our SDK that we provide, that enables their application to communicate MQTT over USSD. But our SIMs can roam pretty much anywhere in the world. So again, this is why our sweet spot maybe for use cases is very much around these moving objects. When you have logistics and you have things passing across the national borders into Botswana or wherever, you want constant visibility of those devices. And if you can do that now with a battery-powered device, it radically changes your costs in terms of your overall solution. So these things can leave Africa and they can still connect wherever they go. That's the kind of exciting aspect of this. And therefore, it makes it relevant to logistics, supply chain, and industries where your objects are typically moving. They're not static necessarily in the middle of a city, where maybe other radio is probably better.
Right. So you've concluded an MVNO type of arrangement with one of the local mobile operators. Can you say which one?
Well, what we're actually doing is we work from the UK. We work with a wholesale partner who has the agreements globally.
I see.
So they have agreements with MTN, Cell C and Vodacom
right here
in South Africa. So we envisage the combined coverage of all three, the network, which is fantastic, where you get black spots maybe in urban areas and things like this.
Right, so your coverage must be pretty close to 100% of the population.
Yeah. I don't know the honest answer to that, but yeah, it's in not population. I know some... The competitive technologies often talk about they have 80 plus or 90% of population. We have geographic coverage, which is important for maybe industries like mining and farming where things are remote, but there probably is a voice. You could probably still make a voice call from a distant base station, and that's all we need in order to operate.
Well, certainly if you look at the coverage maps of the big mobile operators here, they it's pretty ubiquitous. That they talk about 99.8 or 99.9% population coverage.
Yeah.
I think there are some gaps in remote places like the Northern Cape.
Yeah.
But wherever there's a 2G coverage map, that's where you're covered, right?
Completely, yeah. Mm. That is correct. And then across borders as well. So once these things go across and back from Botswana and Namibia, etc., again, there's continuity in connectivity.
Okay, so partnering with mobile operators in those countries as well.
We just hop onto the strongest radio signal we can find, and that's how we solve many of these ubiquity problems.
Interesting. So are there any disadvantages to this technology relative to, dedicated IoT networks like Sigfox, for example?
I think GSM has, some... disadvantages in practicalities with mining. You're not going to find a great connection underground because GSM's not great for penetrating underground. So there's those classic things in steel structures. Again, there might be the kind of Faraday cage type situations. But apart from that, there's not too many. I can't think of many general disadvantages to the way we're deploying these things. There's lots of advantages, such as you can design your device to wake up as frequently as you wish. You're not bound by certain parameters or time windows that you might find with LoRa or other connectivity options. It's bi-directional. You can communicate back to the thing and maybe change its logic and tell it to do something different. Not dissimilar from using mobile data, but we're just not using mobile data. So I think there's probably far more advantages than disadvantages.
All right. So tell me a bit about the offering. Are you bringing hardware products to market? You're going to offer SIMs. Do you have complementary hardware products? Do you offer software solutions around it as well?
Yeah, sure. People can visit our portal and you can find a very sort of simple shop on there. And on there, typically, the most popular item we have is a starter kit. And the starter kit is very much a reference design for an engineering firm to maybe obtain one of these to work out the basic components, to work out their bill of materials for how cheaply now they can make an IoT device. But then we will usually talk to those partners, and this is pretty much what we've been doing for the last 6 months, is developing partnerships with engineering firms and IoT solution companies here in the market who maybe serve different verticals, who then take our SIMs, they have our reference design, but they then typically take our SIMs and they embed them on their thing that they've made using the components they've decided to use. We don't stipulate or dictate what processors you should use or necessarily what modems you should use. So it's very open. And we're using commoditized products. So a lot of engineering firms, they might favor a particular manufacturer of GSM modem. That's perfectly fine. You know, we provide them the appropriate SDK software kit that they need, and they kind of either retrofit existing devices or easily enable new devices.
Okay, so tell us about some of these products and some of the solutions that you've deployed in other markets to date.
Yeah, it's a broad range. Some of them are based on, you know, generic, not generic, but they're in more familiar territories such as telematics or in logistics. Mm-hmm. A recent launch by a partner in India, actually, Hau Robotics, they've got a fantastic cargo tracking solution. And it's kind of being brought to market with a new kind of, you know, tracking as a service proposition. And again, the devices can be made lower cost now. They have a, you know, it's fixed price connectivity anywhere in the world, which is great for tracking cargo. So we've been playing in those kind of traditional areas. And in those areas, there's people making new products, and there's lots of, we've got many opportunities to retrofit where someone already has built a thing and they just want to move away from cellular data. Not necessarily from the cost, but really just for the simplicity and the battery life to make these things last longer. But then we have a whole you know, raft of new emerging kind of use cases. Things from, you know, animal tracking, recently a company called PawTrack, they're European based, they've launched a new range of products for just tracking animals, but again, these devices last longer in the field. And then we start moving into the industrial sector, where some of the partners we're working with here in this market are targeted building very specific devices for different types of you know, specific solutions, you know, ranging from, you know, supply chain, logistics, insurance purposes. It's these types of areas where if you can start making a cheaper device, you can have more exposure to more applications and use cases.
Okay. So you're planning to work, I understand you're planning to work through a channel partner network here in South Africa.
Correct.
Are you establishing an office here as well?
We have a sales director here now in the region, and we're going to kind of monitor how things go. We know the whole proposition is an online offering, so everyone can use our tools online, you can order your SIMs online, all the tech support's online, there's lots of videos and all the usual things you expect, but I think we still need the people factor, and with the partners we now have on board, they're keeping us pretty busy, so we may obviously need to maybe invest in more people here to help develop out the market, but we'll see how that goes over the coming months.
How many other markets do you operate in at the moment?
Well, as I say, it's kind of because it's an online offering, we don't have physically people all around the world, but I'd say we probably have 25, you know, markets where there's active projects and partners engaged with, and now we're working with them to access their customers as well. But it's interesting because of the ubiquity of the offering, almost any partner that now approaches us, and we haven't really been super proactive yet in our marketing, but on our website there's a button you can buy, and many people buy the button. It's a proof of concept, it's a good reference design, but people quite often use it for coverage checking to see if the story really works, and people in Lebanon or the middle of the US might get one of these and click it, and it activates some, you know, an application, and they can really see this stuff works.
Oh, just to show that there's coverage and that sort of thing.
Correct.
All right. So how do you typically work in markets? Also through a channel partner model?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely, yeah. I think the nuances of each market, you know, here we've got partners who know about mining. You know, we it's not our speciality. You know, we're a software company. We know how to deploy things at scale. So we work with them. We try to understand their businesses, get underneath the fabric of their hardware, what they're looking for. Some companies may be software oriented and they don't yet have a hardware partner. So we introduce them to maybe an engineering firm that we've already nurtured and started educating here in the market. So it's very much helping to proactively build that ecosystem. Not dissimilar to the likes of Sigfox, who are probably doing very similar. They have hardware partners and they work with them to build, you know, their things, and then they marry them to sales partners.
Do you see any need to build your own networks at any point?
From our perspective, not really. There are situations. I think there's complementary. All these radio technologies, they're complementary in different ways. You know, conceptually, you know, port authority or a mine, you can see why they might want a LoRa network, because effectively they need their own private network for all their fixed communications, their fixed things. So it may be worth investing, you know, whatever it may be, a few hundred thousand dollars in building one of those. That makes sense. But for the objects that are leaving the mine and entering the mine, therefore you might want to have a secondary network like ours to complement that aspect of the business.
There's so many different IoT technologies out there, it's difficult to keep up. You've got Sigfox, you've got your technology here based on USSD, you've got LoRaNet, you've got NB-IoT, and there are probably half a dozen others. Is there space for all of these technologies? I mean, are they all kind of doing the same thing, or do you think they have real competitive differentiators that will allow them all to prosper?
Yeah, I think because the industry is tipped to be so large, and there's so many different use cases, I think there's plenty of space for all of these technologies to kind of, you know, cohabit together. But I think at the same time, for a business decision maker, it's difficult to work out which ones you need to actually use. And I think that's where we're at in the cusp of, you know, where we are in the market now. Mm-hmm. Companies are building prototypes. They're figuring out what works for them. And I think, you know, we'll start to see where these different radio technologies will start to find their niches, and they'll become synonymous with particular things, if you like. That's why that's the sense I get from talking to the partners involved in each market.
Tell me a bit about ThingStream's pricing. Is it standardized pricing based on the number of messages that are transferred to a device? What does that pricing look like?
Yeah, sure. So coming back to, we're using this, we're enabling devices to communicate using MQTT as a protocol. Now, to do that, MQTT is a publish-subscribe protocol, and therefore you need something in between your servers and your devices to manage the subscription, the topics. So you need an MQTT broker, and that's what we have. We've got a carrier-grade broker with some extra value-added tools for visually wiring your applications together and things like this. So it's a connectivity and integration offering.
So a server, in essence.
We've built this. We host it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So it's a complete server infrastructure, which again stops, you know, prevents a company having to go and host all that stuff themselves. So it's a SaaS-based offering. So that's one component. Then you need connectivity. So that's part of this as well. So we bundle all these things together, and we offer that as a straight price of $1 per month anywhere in the world in terms of connectivity, and you get the software stack with that as well. So it's almost a SaaS offering with sort of GSM included with it.
And I'm imagining that latency isn't a big issue in the IoT world, but is there any need to put down the server infrastructure in the markets that you go into? For example, would you need to host the server infrastructure in a data center here in South Africa, or is it enough to simply put it in an AWS data center anywhere in the world?
The way we deployed this, in the way it auto scales, you can put it anywhere in the world, and it almost senses where it needs to spin up capacity to serve that.
But latency isn't really that important in IoT.
Some customers are, you know, concerned about latency, but we haven't seen the challenges with any problems from a technical perspective. But typically, when you're moving bytes, you know, you can get them to where they need to be clearly in the timescales that customers need.
Okay, Neil. Before I let you go, what do you think is the size of the market opportunity here in South Africa for IoT?
I think it's large. I think something that surprised us in the market is just the speed in which people, first of all, develop applications. There's a lot of proactivity. And then I think the scale of the opportunity is a global opportunity from the South African market. Maybe 6 to 8 months ago, personally, I thought it was a domestic opportunity around agriculture and the classic industries. But the more we understand, you know, how the industrial market works and the engineering firms are working and their export opportunities, I think the South African engineering market for IoT actually is an export industry, because there's so much know-how and manufacturing actually here of devices. I think it's going to be really large. A number I couldn't quote it, but you can see it's going to be, you know, a significant contribution globally, not just to a domestic market.
Are there particular industries in South Africa and worldwide that are adopting IoT technologies more aggressively? Are there industries that are more suited to this technology? I mean, you've mentioned agriculture, you've mentioned mining. Are those two early adopters?
I'd actually say supply chain. We have a number of projects that are global projects, but based from South African companies for major supply chain opportunities, where I think, you know, that those industries can clearly see the benefits of doing improving the visibility of product as it moves through the value chain and monitoring it, and there's insurance implications. That seems to be one of the hot areas, I'd say, right now. I think all areas seem to be, you know, very proactive, but supply chain, definitely, you know, tracking an asset and a condition associated with it, a temperature or something, is a very common use case.
Great stuff. Neil Hamilton is VP for Business Development at ThinkStream. Thanks so much for talking to TechCentral today.
Thank you very much.